I knew T-Mobile was getting too large, and I didn't trust my gut to go back and look at what we need to do to set ourselves up if T-Mobile did leave. I just kept getting complacent. You become complacent, you lose.
Hey guys, Damian Stevens, host of MSP Mindset, founder and CEO of Serbosity. Today, I continue my mission to interview 100 of the fastest growing and most interesting MSPs on the planet and write the book on it. Today, I'm blessed to be joined by Sean Moreno, and he shares a heart-wrenching story of losing $400,000 a year at his MSP and how he turned that around to $1 million profit difference of positive $600,000 per year in just a few years. And more importantly, he went step by step of what he had to do to change himself in order to change his business. If you'd like to learn how to do that for your MSP, don't miss out on my conversation with Sean today. So Sean, this is going to be a broad question, but you've had a really interesting ride to get here. Take me back to some of the early struggles in your MSP.
Yeah. So when I started the MSP, I was by myself. I did a lot of things, CFO hat, CTO hat. Mm. I was the actual in the weeds working, hanging network drops, putting in switches. You know, my first real consulting job was putting up Wi-Fi for local marinas and getting boaters access. So I was in the weeds working that. As I started to grow and got into the MSP world that I never really knew about, I came from background enterprise, working for HP, working for Microsoft, big companies like Pulte Homes, you know, never really had MSP experience, but had IT experience. And I realized quickly that enterprise experience, the small businesses were struggling. So that's where I really wanted to drive my enterprise experience, help the small businesses and my friends and family. That's who was calling me all the time anyways. So I figured, well, if I'm going to do that, let's help them out. So at the beginning, I started to grow an MSP because I landed a large account quickly, and it became from consulting to a help desk, to a support desk, to, you know, a true MSP. And that was T-Mobile. So we helped a local T-Mobile dealer locally. They had 20 locations, and that was my first, I'll call it, real MSP client. As I grew that, I soon realized I was not a CFO. I was not an HR person, and hiring people and mentoring, coaching, yes, I could do that at an enterprise level, but not owning a business and didn't, you know all the regulations and rules because I had big HR teams to help us. So I soon realized I needed to hire business partners that were willing to take on those roles. So hired a CFO, hired an HR person, and eventually I brought in a CTO or a CIO that partnered up to help drive technology and concentrate on technology so I could concentrate more on the business as a whole, networking, making sure we're growing, things like that. So, you know, at the beginning, it was tough. I had to really decide, is this the right path? Are we ready? You know, is it the right move at the time to make sure that I bring in these high level people? Because we're small.
Yeah. So when was that? Because I think that's always been my challenge. It's like, you know, oh, I'm not big enough. I'm not sure if I can.
So you figure I started the company in 2008 as a consulting company. By 2009, 2010, I started getting some leads to this T-Mobile customer. By 2010, actually happened late 2009 to 2010 on Christmas Eve. I got a call saying, hey, January 1st, can you actually provide a help desk? We're struggling and we need someone who can provide that. So, of course, being an entrepreneur, I said, sure, we can. So I opened up a help desk immediately January 1st, went out, bought a bunch of Verizon phones, hired anyone who was willing to help me at the time, and we created a quick fix for this customer, produced a help desk. So then 2010 happened. We're going through it. And that's when I realized after 2010, going through my first true tax season by myself and understanding what things I missed, and actually payroll was an issue now because I had more than one person. That's when I realized quickly I need to make sure that I'm set up for success, because I will fail in the CFO position. I am just not, accounting's not my niche. So I brought in CFO to help out with that. Then I soon realized 2010, 2011, as we started growing and getting more and more employees, because the T-Mobile customer started growing and we needed to hire more employees to keep up with their growth. HR was big. You know, there's rules, there's things that we can and can't do, setting up paperwork, onboarding, and just making sure that we're following HR rules so we don't get a lawsuit or someone comes after us or something happens internally that I can't handle. I need to have someone that has that background. So HR was the next step. And by 2011, 2012, we're probably close to from 20 locations for the T-Mobile dealer that we supported. They started growing. They were at 50 or 60, and they were upwards looking towards to be 100 stores quickly. So then I needed someone who could actually pay attention to technology and put in the right tool set so we could support the T-Mobile locations that we were first customer we had. So I brought in these business partners based on friendships and long-term relationships through my years in the enterprise space.
So let me back you up for a minute. So when was it the first you brought on the first? And I guess it was it the HR
CFO or accounting?
So was that an outsourced
group? No, or was that was like actually a business partner. Hey, how do we become partners? How can we work together? Would you like to go down this ride and actually be part owner?
So I want to back up for a minute. I know building a business, in my experience, it can really be really mm-hmm. lonely. And like you said, HR or CFO or all these other hats that just, you know, I'm not good at, right? I'm not competent, in certain areas. So, what caused you to decide that? Like to say, hey, I gotta bring in a partner. I've gotta bring in a CFO. Like what preceded that?
Truthfully, IRS knocking on my door.
Yeah. Really?
Wow. That was when I didn't know sales tax. I didn't understand that side of the house. And, you know, I was in business for a few years as consulting. And then we started growing, started setting up vendor contracts and things like that. There are certain financial pieces of it that I just didn't understand. So the day the IRS knocked on my door and my wife was like, why are they knocking on our door? I said, yeah, we need to talk to someone. So, you know, understanding what we need to pay for quarterly taxes. I just filed regular taxes like everyone else did. So I really didn't have that background of the true business operations piece financially. So that was why, to be honest, that's why I brought in a CFO. I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't want to. Invoicing was easy because it was small, a couple of customers. I can make sure invoicing was properly aligned, things like that. But once we grew and we started getting more customers and things like that, that role was critical. That was the person who was making sure invoicing was done properly, making sure we have our system set up so we can, we're not missing things. You know, we probably in the first 2 years of before the actual CFO got involved, I probably lost thousands and thousands of dollars because I just missed it. I didn't bill for it, or I bought product but never charged a customer. I just was trying to do the right thing, get them up and running. So having someone that could be hold me accountable for that was key.
So about how many employees did you have when you brought on the CFO?
We had, at that time, we started probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 There was a total of six of us together.
Wow, that's super early for us. In my experience for a CFO, what made you say, what made you not do a full-time or a fractional, or why a partner?
A good friend of mine. He offered, hey, I can help you out. And he did. He was able to help me out part-time. But, he was full-time, but he was part-time because he still had his own career. He was still working as well. So it was, yes, I brought in a business partner, maybe not a full-time person sitting there all the time, but a business partner that would help that piece out.
Mm. And then I know I interrupted, but if you would kind of keep going, what other business partners did you decide to bring
in? So after that, we got together, started thinking about it. Again, the business partners I brought in, full transparency, we worked together in a life before, really good friends. We all at one time said, hey, maybe one day we'll start a business. So I was the risk taker and I was able to do that. So as the need came across, HR became a bigger issue to the team. I'm starting now, we're from six, now we're at 12. I can see growth. I can see T-Mobile growing quickly. The one customer became two T-Mobile dealers, then became three T-Mobile dealers. We got a relationship with T-Mobile, built that up. I also needed someone who had contract, their ability to read contracts, understand them. T-Mobile had a very stringent contract that we had to sign if we were going to work with them and their dealers. So as that started growing in our relationship with T-Mobile, our HR was the next thing we needed to help manage that and help build process. That was key. Operationally as well, HR helped with the process building of things, and the experience of my employees needed to be an experience that was delightful from the time they started to, through their journey as an employee. I couldn't do that. I was just, that's not me. I can mentor and coach and, rah-rah employees, but to make sure they're following process, make sure we have guidelines, make sure that we have people being held accountable, that's began the journey of building those processes and operational needs that we needed that I didn't have the skill set to do or the time to do it. I'll be honest, I was chasing T-Mobile dealers and they were building new locations. Like every other day, a new location was being sent to us to build. Hey, we need cabling. We need all new PCs. We need TVs. We need all this stuff. So that was another piece that I had to figure out, put together, build standards. And I was in the field. It was Thanksgiving. We were in Chicago. We had four new stores or a couple of new stores and a couple of older stores that we were setting up with new standard equipment. I was there working 24/7. As an entrepreneur, you expect to do that. I couldn't manage the back end of the folks that were answering the calls for the actual support. So those are the things that I knew right away HR needed to be involved in, someone who was helping managing and building things out. As we started growing, we needed someone who could hire managers because I needed managers to manage the team, not me. So that's where that became. And then our CTO, he was brought in early on too, as just as a guidance, as advice, what we should be doing, but then became a business partner. And eventually both, everyone quit their jobs and worked full time as a business partner inside of Data Tech Cafe.
So what were the roles and how many?
There was this business partners? There was four business partners altogether, myself as a CEO, / COO, CFO, CTO or CIO, and our HR. So, at that time, there was four of us leaders working together to build a dream business that we all kind of dreamt together one time, another on a work trip. Hey, we don't want to do this anymore. And what are we going to do? So that's where that business idea came from, and they were the folks that I relied on.
That's really cool. So you started bringing on the first partner when you're somewhere around 12 employees. Mm-hmm. And by the time you had the third or let's say fourth partner,
we were about, at that time we were at around 30 people. You know, that was 2012. Things were going good. We were really building our T-Mobile MSP for T-Mobile, basically. You know, that was our, we called it the cash cow, right? They were paying for it all. During that time, you know, it was good. Things were good. We were building things up, getting managers involved, making sure that we had a team set up to do what we needed to do. So that's kind of the journey at the beginning where I grabbed people. Probably, you know, it was maybe early for most any MSP or entrepreneurs to do that, but I recognized early on that if I did set that up, we would fail. I'd probably miss something, or I'd be in jail because I didn't pay IRS. You know,
right?
Those things. So right. That's kind of the beginning of the journey I went through.
Yeah, and I mean, you grew pretty rapidly there for several years, right? So what was that? What was that for folks that haven't heard another episode? What was that growth like over that rapid period?
Yeah, from 2012 to 2019. We became the number one dealer IT support. T-Mobile recognized that early on, and there was another company out of Chicago that was doing a couple of dealers, and they were a smaller firm. And it was really just between us two. We were handling, you know, a good portion of their dealers. Well, eventually, dealers were just supporting themselves. T-Mobile had some standards that they weren't following. There was a lot of issues with these small dealers that had maybe 20 stores or less. So what they did is they turned around and they said, hey, every dealer has to pick a dealer IT between us and another dealer, unless you actually have an IT person on staff and prove to us that they're capable of handling the support for the systems. So that helped us grow rapidly. We became the number one dealer IT nationwide. We had 90% of the dealers, well, 80%, 20% fell off either to the other IT support or local IT. So we grew quickly, you know, and by the end of the dealer that I was working with, I mean, they grew to 300 stores overnight. So we were busy supporting, they grew, their office grew from, we'll say when I first met them, they had 10 people maybe at most, to hundreds of people. They had, you know, regional directors, they had managers, they had, I mean, it just, so together we grew. And then I was able to grow through T-Mobile. When we grew through T-Mobile, T-Mobile recognized us. So we were setting standards for T-Mobile. T-Mobile was coming to us, bringing us to their conferences, making sure that we're included in their tech stack. How do we figure this out? Internet issues that everyone was having, you know, we brought in a Cradlepoint solution that had LTE backup so they could continue selling. So they looked at us to help with that stuff. So we became a large dealer IT support for T-Mobile quickly.
So what was the change in headcount from like 2012 to 2019?
At the highest, we were probably 35, 40 employees, you know, then.
When you started, it was
like six, okay. You know, there was, including myself, six. I had four people that were helping with support desk. Two kind of were an operations person and a high-end tech person. So, you know, six or seven of us just kind of putting things together, piecing things together.
Yeah, so clearly putting in leadership, and which in your case happened to be business partners earlier than most, prepared you for the growth, it seems like. But I'm curious, just on a personal level, like what did that do to your ability to sleep and stress levels as you were able to have somebody take off.
Yeah, absolutely. It did help. It was nice. I was able to relieve the unknown. I just did the unknown. You know, it also helped my wife understand, yep, we're not going to jail. You know, we're doing things right. It did relieve a lot of that pressure. You know, then you got other pressure of, you know, making sure that we're doing the right thing for the customer, keeping those customers. I got more involved in the account management piece of it then, you know, and the sales piece. I was definitely in charge of the sales piece. So I was the face of the company. It allowed me to do that and not have to be sitting at a T-Mobile store building it out for a whole week and not be able to stay in contact with the dealers, not, you know, networking, making sure that we're doing the right thing for the customer. So it gave me that opportunity to do that, having the back end piece, because I wasn't sitting there trying to figure out invoicing, trying to figure out what do we have to pay for sales tax, worrying about HR issues. What was our tech stack? What antivirus we were going to use? What, you know, firewalls we're going to use? Well, we used Cradle Point, you know, and came down to that. So things like that, that I didn't have to do. I didn't have to focus on that. I focused more on the relationship piece of the business.
There's so many of us that run a business by themselves. And I just know when I've done that, it's so lonely. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like I'm burned out. I want to give up. What advice do you have about, like, you had, you know, innovative way of bringing on partners? Because sometimes I know it's like, I can't afford a CFO or whatever that next hire is.
Yeah, I was fortunate. My financial situation allowed me to take those risks. A lot of us don't have that, you know, that we're starting MSPs and that's our main income and things are there. So again, as I look back, even today, if I didn't have those partners, I need help. I couldn't put that all on my shoulders because you're right. You feel lonely. You're trying to figure out how am I going to do day-to-day stuff? And it was tough because you had no one to go to. As I've been in the business for 16 plus years now, I've met a lot of people and mentored a lot of different MSPs as well. And reach out. You have to reach out. You have to look for those fractional CFOs now, those companies that do take all your receipts and make sure it's import correctly into QuickBooks and make sure that the billing is done properly. There's companies out there that are, they do HR payroll and things like that. You lean on those type of companies, and which we did. Eventually we went down that route, as we started to get to a organization that we needed help, even having the CFO and the HR people involved, you still needed that extra help. So we went to those PEO firms that did the HR and payroll. Then we were able to offer a 401k. We were able to offer benefits. Where when I first started, I had no benefits. Your benefits was just be glad I'm paying you right now. You know, yeah. I paid you well, so you figure out the rest. Well, that doesn't keep or retain people. That was the other hurdle that HR really helped out with, because again, all I did was give them a paycheck. And at first they were 1099s. I didn't even know how to set up a true payroll. So
yeah,
those are the things that I struggled with. So if you're struggling, you know, you got to lean on people, because otherwise you're just going to drown. You're just drowned in all the stuff you have to do. And you don't really focus on what you need to do to grow the company. That's the bigger thing, is growing the company. Keeping one lesson I learned out of this is sales. I think we talked about this before. I truly realized sales is the key to success. I didn't then. I wasn't looking at sales. I was knee deep in the business, and I left sales out. Yes, I was doing relationships with T-Mobile, and I was getting those, I call it, it's almost like they were driving up and asking for fries, you know. I need a hamburger, but I also need fries. And that's what T-Mobile was doing to us. So I was fortunate, but I didn't go look at sales outside of that vertical. So that's one of the things that drove that. If I could take myself and go back to 2009, 2010, I would have been possibly, there may have been a sales resource involved in that, that, hey, someone who has sales experience. I was an engineer by heart. Relationships came easy to me, but sales did not. So that maybe would have been one of the roles that I may have hired differently.
Yeah, I imagine it's easy also as fast as the orders were coming in, right? All the new dealers, all the new things. It was just, we need this, right? It's easy, right, to focus on that because revenue growth comes.
Yep. We'll do it. I was that entrepreneur. Hey, whatever you want, we'll do. And early on, I did. I was doing cabling. I was doing anything they wanted for the most part. You know, they needed help with the GCs and making sure that they had all their electrical in the place they need to be and cubes and things like that. So I was helping with their operations piece as well. And, you know, we weren't selling that service, but we were doing it. You know, we were going through whatever T-Mobile wanted, we jumped. And that was another issue I found early on is learn to say no. You have the right to say no. You have, you can't do it all. You're not there to do it all. Because if I looked at it truly, I would have found that there was more value in the IT space and the support I was giving than just jumping through hoops, making sure that their stores were set up properly with outside IT infrastructure. And that's, they sucked us in. Hey, I want you to be part of our build team. How do you, you know, and those are things that distract us. Or if the CEO wanted something new, he's like, I want it today. And we would jump and do all that just because the revenue was so good. Now I've learned sometimes you have to push back and give boundaries and create those boundaries, making sure that everyone has the right expectations of what you do, how you do it, and create those processes to be successful.
What, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently around saying no?
I would have set up boundaries a lot sooner than I did. So I could say no. I couldn't say no because I didn't know what my boundaries were. I didn't understand it. So I would have gone back and really dived into the numbers and understood early on before the CFO really started. I was just taking on everything and we just kept doing it because it was good money coming in, but we never sat down and dug into the numbers to really understand what we were doing. So again, someone called us up. It didn't matter what the job was. If I could sell it and make a dollar, I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing my time was a lot involved in it too. So that dollar now only became maybe pennies or a loss. So that's where the no came in. That's like, I needed to really look at things and say, no, we're not a cabling company. That's just, I'm not set up to be a cabling company. I'm pushing guys to go do things they've never done before. And we were pushing our team to extents that they were just more focused on support and infrastructure and IT related items. Structure cabling, it's a whole nother animal. That's a whole nother business.
Yeah.
Now, funny story is we do have a structure cabling business though. I had a business partner that we brought in that built the entire cabling business. So right now we have a cabling business, but totally different. Two different sides of the house. They're not the same. MSP and cabling should not be the same. Even though you can run a wire, it doesn't mean you have the skill sets to do that.
No.
So that's how I learned to say no quickly, because we were taking on stuff that we shouldn't have been doing. Focus on your niche. Focus on your support. Focus on how you can build IT standards. Focus on how you can have customers run smoothly. And when they do need help, that you truly are giving them the help and support they need.
So that's a tough one. How do you say no? And how do you even figure out what your niche is? In the early days, I know it was like, if your check clears, you're a good customer, you know?
And they paid on time, right? I didn't have to bug you.
Right.
And they paid on time. Yeah. How did I find no? Or how did, what was the question again?
How do you actually say no? And then how did you end up finding your niche? Like you mentioned that.
Failures. When you failed at it enough that your brand or now your reputation of who you are and what you do. That's how I knew. Okay, no, I can't do that. You want me to do AV specialized systems? I've never done AV, but I said I could. But again, it's just not that wasn't our niche. So after a few times screwing that up, we said, no, you know, we can't do that. We can't do AV. Low voltage. Yeah, we did low voltage. At best, we were learning on the job, and then we're sending people back to fix our stuff because we screwed it up. We never had the right testers to make sure, verify and certify that line was good. It was, things that we found other people were doing wrong. We had someone said they could do low voltage for us. We go back out there up in the ceiling. Do they tie it in literally to cut the wires, tied them in with black tape and no wonder why stuff wasn't working, you know, not saying that our team did stuff like that, but we did similar things and we're troubleshooting stuff. We don't really know how to troubleshoot. So once I learned that, no, it was easy. No, you don't want me doing that. Just like right now, you don't want me doing accounting. You know, you call me up and say, you know, reconcile your books and pay taxes and pay payroll. You don't want me doing that. I'll mess it up. I can guarantee it. So that's where no came from. It was once I realized that there's more headache involved and failed, we couldn't do it. And we weren't going to do it. You know, there was stance at cabling. Even today, we don't do cabling. We don't touch it. We leave it for the experts to do. And you want someone in the niche. Back then, Apple, Macs. I had no experience with Macs. I had to say no because I couldn't even log in. I couldn't even tell you right click versus left click. I didn't know a Mac OS. So that was the sure. You know, things like that. That's when no came in is I don't know. I can't help you.
So what is your niche?
My niche, good question. I would say my niche is helping people grow. My niche is mentoring, helping others grow businesses, growing the team, really, my niche is networking, keeping, I found that even teams that I build, they're the strongest teams. So, you know, building that delightful experience for customers as well as delightful experience for our team, making sure that they understand they are a team that's helping thousands of people out there. And what we do makes an impact. Even advice to other MSPs, working with them, that's my niche. Here's my experience. Here's what I found. Here's what you're doing, you know, things you could do a little better. Tweak this operational process. We'll get you to maybe 5X when you want to do sell. Looking at your sales process, understanding how important sales is when I didn't understand that. Where are you at? You want to stay, you know, if you want a hobby job, fine. You know, here's how we can get you to a real business. That's my niche, is helping people understand that and where they can grow. It's a fast-paced world out there, and you get stuck into your own, you know, complacent, right? You're just, I'm making money. There's a paycheck coming in, doing the same thing over and over again. And if you're not hungry enough to even explore, hey, what else can I do to fine-tune it? You're just stuck in the thousand bosses you have because you have, you know, all these customers calling you every day on your phone, and all you're doing is creating that, I call it boutique service that, hey, they can call you anytime they want. You know, let's set up processes and operations that can get you free from that and build your business to be able to grow. So now it's not just your phone ringing.
How did you figure out that's what you're so good at?
A successful business. We went from, I think we talked about this in the past, growing from T-Mobile, losing T-Mobile in around 2018, 2019, and growing all these other verticals to surpass what T-Mobile was bringing in revenue. Then taking that team, building a team, working together, understanding my business partners and I needed to be on the same vision. Some of us had a different vision. I had a different vision. Things changed a little bit as you grow, as you mature as a business owner. Making sure those business partners are aligned with you. That was one of the things we weren't aligned. And some of us had to move on and do their own thing. And once we did that and we figured that out, I was able to turn the business around because 2019, then 2020 hit. I had T-Mobile I lost in 2019 because they acquired, what did they acquire? Sprint. Mm-hmm. They joined forces. And then most of the dealers were gobbled up by the larger dealers. And they brought in-house IT, which made sense. When you get that big, you have, 1,000 stores and things like that. It made sense to do that, which I was kind of disappointed because, again, that was our bread and butter. And we could do it. We had it, had the systems built. And again, we built it so well that their standards were there that they could bring it in-house quickly. So, we were looking at that. We moved our verticals. 2020 hit. We started changing roles and doing different things inside of the business partners. And I soon realized, things got bad and we were losing money for a while. So at that time, we made choices and some of us I left. When 2019 hit, the HR and CFO, they had to step down and move on just because we were down to literally what handful of customers that we did happen to grab during my networking days. So less than 10 customers with hardly any endpoint, maybe less than 300 or 400 endpoints at most. So we streamlined, we had to lay off everyone. That was tough. That was really tough, laying off people that have been working with you for the last 10 years. Some were family members. As you hire your family members and friends. Where are they going to go? How are they going to? I mean, that was on our shoulders. How do you keep that going? How do you keep your employees? Yeah. They have families. So that stress turned into 2020, a new stress, but it then turned around a little bit because everyone needed help in 2020. So we got busy. Mm-hmm. So we were able to hire a couple extra employees. But then as 2020 started winding down a little bit, we decided to go back to cabling. We brought cabling in. We had a partner that came in working with us as well. So now it went from two partners back to three partners. We were ups and downs and things like that. And we started to grow. We brought in marketing, outsourced marketing. So we knew we needed to do something that was costly. Mm-hmm. So we were bleeding money just to try to get back to the T-Mobile days.
Yeah. So what was your biggest loss, like the biggest year in terms of financial loss?
2019. Or 2020 was the biggest financial loss because we lost the revenue from T-Mobile at the end of 2019.
And so, correct me if I'm getting this right, but you went from make a $400,000 loss to at some point maybe a $600,000 profit, right? That's $1 million change in not revenue, but in profit. Yeah. So what was different this
time? So during this time, we were growing. We hired people. We got people coming in. And sales started growing because we did have marketing. We did have some dedicated sales staff helping us grow. But we were adding so much headcount because of just the growth to try to keep up on it. And we focused on T-Mobile for so many years that having several new verticals to get into was a learning curve. It was definitely, we built T-Mobile, we built their systems, we had standards, and everyone knew how to support them. Now we go from, oh, I got SonicWall, or I got Meraki, or I have a Mac or two, or, now we have all these different applications we have to support and learn. Healthcare, HIPAA, we landed a manufacturing company that was working with DOD, so we started learning about Nest and things like that. So it really turned our business of really labor intensive and trying to get things going. So we were losing money on top of taking on things we probably shouldn't have, cabling again. We didn't learn our lesson early on. We focused on just bringing money in back into the bank account, right? You lose that big of account, you lose your cash cow. They're filling that bank account every month with funds, and things were, well, I got complacent. I'll be honest, I got complacent. I didn't do well with going out and getting those different verticals during that time when we could have captured, instead of having 10% or even 5% of revenue coming from outside of T-Mobile, we should have, made that a little bit more even, Right. Then we started realizing quickly leadership wasn't on the same page, being my business owners and I. So that's when the business owners stepped down again, other ones for that reason, not for loss of revenue with T-Mobile, but more now we're not on the same page. We needed to move on.
How do you get, I know I have had to lay people off, and at least in my experience, there's just nothing worse because I feel like it's a promise that you can come to work and you'll get, as long as you work, you'll get paid. And then let alone, some business partners are leaving, right? Everybody's going to go through some version of this, I think. But when you're in it, there's just nothing worse. So what did that feel like, and how did you get the will to show up every day and keep going forward?
I'm not going to lie. It was an emotional roller coaster. It was not a fun time. You're losing your best friend. You work together every day of your life for 16 plus years. I seen those people more than my own family at times. Mm-hmm. So it did. And it changed my life. But that individual that had to leave, that was something that just turned around even for themselves. It was better for them. So in the end, everything worked out. It was better for both. I just knew that I wasn't going to give up on my dream that I started. I knew in my heart that, I wanted to continue instead of just folding and calling it a day. We're losing this revenue. Let's just stop. I also had family members that were counting on me now, because I had to go back to that pool of people. Hey, need some help here. Let's try to grow this together. And that's who stuck with me, close family members and friends. So I realized at that point, go ahead, business partner, you need to do what you need to do best for you and your family. And that's what I always, we collectively, the leadership, we all believed in that. We always told our employees, family should come first. You should have that work-life balance, but family's first. If I'm destroying your family, don't let me be the issue. Go ahead, move on. I'll help you find a job, And I've had individual employees that we had to help out because the MSP world, it's a different world. It's not meant for everybody. So that's kind of where that came from, is I knew to take that next leap, I needed to let go of that business partner, let him do what he had to do, take on whatever I needed to, keep some part-time people that were helping me out, And then I needed to make some really tough decisions. And that's when I truly believed in keeping everything in-house and not outsourcing. It was a tough, you know, I believe we could do way better of support and giving that delightful experience, I call. You know, when a customer calls, I want to give them that delightful experience and the experience of, you know, someone's there for them to help. I didn't want to outsource just due to either offshoring. My customers would be just a number because I worked for HP. I was just a number. My manager didn't know who I was. I was just a number. And I didn't want our customers to feel that way. I really wanted our customers to feel, hey, this is really the people we rely on. They're in our back door. We can walk into their office and see. And that was the showcase I had, right? I had 35 people at one time, had a big office. People could walk in. They felt, wow. This is great. It's not the hobbyist who's supporting me. We had systems in place to really help them grow as a business. So I wanted that feeling again. I wanted to make sure we could do that and provide that. So I was really scared. And then I started dabbling in some offshore, or not particularly offshore, but just outsourcing the level one help desk calls. Some of it was offshore, some was local in the States. When I was going back and forth, customers were giving me feedback and they didn't like it, so we had to stop it. I met a local a stateside company. Everybody was based in Dallas. I was very skeptical, but they kept telling me what they're doing and the great things they're doing and what they were different about how they set up the support was they created these pods, and it was genius. I did this with T-Mobile. I created pods for each region and each dealer the same way. So everyone got to know those four or five people when they picked up the phone. Hey, Janice, it's been a while. I haven't talked to you. So they created the same concept where I felt my customers would now be talking to four or five techs that knew who they were. Same problem came up. Hey, printer's still broke. Yeah, we got down to the root cause. Now you got a new printer, but I know what we did to fix this. So the conversations became easier with customers when they were answering, because I just made them part of my team when I finally made that decision. So what happened is I went down, met the 20 down in Dallas. Tim didn't allow anyone to come into their little summits that they had for members, but I forced my hand. Hey, Tim, I need to come see this. So they brought me in. They said, okay, you'll be the first guy that I've ever seen a summit without being a member. And I've seen the pod structure, and I met the pod leaders, and I met the teams, and I sat down with them, and I'm listening to the calls coming in and things like that. And I'm like, oh, this is my T-Mobile staff. This is what I built. I'm comfortable with it. So that was the first step is, okay, now I got somebody that I think I can do. We got onboarded, even a couple customers got things going. I still had a massive staff I still working with. That's the hard decision. Now, okay, how do I get down to a lean staff? Because now I have someone who can actually take care of the customer on the first call. Anything else is going to be, I physically need you on site. This is way over my head. It's engineering and it's projects. So I had to weed out which team members I could keep for that and others I could do that. So I started doing that. And that was a tough decision because it wasn't easier. Oh, we lost T-Mobile. You know, we're going to help you find a couple of jobs. You only have a couple of weeks to do that, or a month to do that. Let's help you out. Now I got to be strategic. I had to make sure the right players are on the bus. I had to make sure that these people are ready to take on bigger and better projects and support. And I had to weed out the people that couldn't do that. So now the conversation is, hey, we're going in a different direction. And that really felt bad for me. It was hard for me to lay those people off because they have families. And I did everything I could, help them with the resumes, help them with that. And I said, listen, whatever we need to do, we'll get you a job. We'll find you a job, hopefully before, you know, the time that we allotted for this. We're transitioning to this group down in Dallas that's going to help us with tier one level one help desk. So once I did that and I was able to change my focus to larger projects, get our teams supporting the onsite that we needed, and allow the 20 to handle all my tier one, level one questions, I was then able to reback into focusing on how do I get sales. So then I was able to really drive home sales, bringing in the revenue we needed in MSP sales, less structured cabling sales. Because structured cabling is one time only. You have to go after that event every month to make sure that you're getting it. So if you sold a job for $100,000 and it's done, you won't get that $100,000 again. So we had to focus back in MSP sales. And that's what we did. We dug in, focused on MSP sales. We became lean and we were able to give the same support that we were able to give with all the people we had in staff prior to that. Sorry about that. So that's how we went from losing money to actually on the positive side of things. And then as we started to grow and get better at these processes, we were able to get new customers faster and onboard them and bring them in. And the customers that we weren't really paying attention to, we had time to pay attention to and found out, wow, they have 5 projects that are very profitable. We can come in. They need new servers. They need new workstations. That was all billable. Now we were able to turn ourselves around instead of just fighting on keeping tickets down to less than 100 a tech. You know, we were buried in tickets, and we were chasing tickets. Now we were chasing projects. We were chasing customers. So that turned us around quickly. Drove us into a positive.
What was the breakthrough? You work with the 20, but you had, like you said, a massive staff. Mm-hmm. So what changed that you were able to get more done? I mean, was it that they had more availability or more hours, or was it something related to systems or process? I'm kind of curious, like if you already had a massive staff, but you couldn't keep up with tickets, and now you can also waste a lot of money just by going all, you know, to the wrong place and, you know, outsourcing and just throw money out the window doing that too. So what was the breakthrough?
They built the tier one support desk that was capable of closing tickets on the first call. They had a 24-hour staff. We did not. And they had the staff where I was hiring people that were higher engineering level, but they were doing tier one tickets. So I was wasting resources on things that our phone did not stop. All they were doing is picking up the phone. So a lot of that, and then a lot of it was, our operations still needed to be refined more on the new verticals we picked up over the last, you know, since 2020. This is now 2023, 2024. This is all happening. So the last 3-4 years. And then I did go through techs. You get them trained and 3 months later, they're finding a different job. So we were constantly in a rotation of techs. That hurts you more than you think it does. It's, you know, getting someone up to speed and then they leave. You're going back down 4 months, then 5-6 months, you know, backwards. So not having that consistency of techs that can support. Yeah, we had a lot of techs, but we were going, you know, through some of them. So that's where the 20 came in and took that consistency. They had the people involved. They had the pod set up. And I felt at home with it because I felt that it was being ran like we had when we had T-Mobile structure set up. So, you know, that's where I felt we were able to gain ground. And it cost less than hiring direct techs. You know, I was able to reduce a lot of labor cost by going to the 20 that way. Oh, the other thing, one big thing is they offer tool sets that I could offload that I didn't need any longer. That was part of the package of that. So now I'm getting the power of a large MSP of buying tool sets at a way cheaper price. So where we're small, we're paying high end price on things, even, you know, giving that cost savings to our customers for purchasing power. That was the big difference as well. We were able to get things at a reduced rate because of the power of the 20 and how large they were.
What do you attribute to going from a $400,000 loss to a $600,000 profit in just a few years?
Two things.
And how do you do $1 million difference in profit? That's
right. Leadership and business partners are costly. So we gained a lot when we separated. We gained high-end engineers are expensive in Detroit. So, you know, quickly labor costs, I was able to reduce, you know, majority of that. And then I was able to get traction on new sales versus just one or two a month. Now we're getting, you know, six or, you know, and we're closing better now because we have the time to onboard people, do things. I have, you know, we're not just buried in tickets. We were able to actually go out to the customer and work with them. And that even produced where instead of onboarding, it was just get them onboarded so we can start collecting their monthly MRR. Now it got to, hey, there's four other projects we can do, and we would do those as well. So that contributed to that revenue coming in and really putting us in the better place than we were. We couldn't do that before because we couldn't focus on sales. We were focusing on just keeping things happy, keeping customers happy. Because, you know, you have 100 tickets per tech, their customers aren't happy. They're waiting for you to respond and things like that. So I was firefighting a lot of that just to keep our customers. We're now having the 20 involved. Took some of that pressure off. Tickets were down. They were getting the responses they needed. We gave them our largest customer, and everyone thought I was doing the wrong thing, but I needed to see if they could handle our largest customer, who was our noisiest customer. I knew they could handle all our customers. You know, I forget how many endpoints, 2,000 endpoints, 2,500 endpoints. Once I gave them that and they could answer the calls of that first large customer, you know, they had a couple hundred employees. I want to say maybe 200 or so, 300 endpoints that we were working on with them. And they were able to take that noise away from our techs. I knew that's going to save us money because now I can give them every customer and take away the noise, the phone ringing off the hook. Now we can truly focus on the customer and what they need. And we did. That turned us around. Projects became bigger. But I was able to do more projects than I ever was able to do because we were a help desk first, project second. Sales. I could focus on sales because now I can have teams that can actually onboard customers. Where before, still help desk first, then onboarding.
What allowed you to turn around the sales and marketing?
What allowed me to turn around?
Yeah. How did you? Because you went from not really selling much. You had a lot of, like, you had the T-Mobile where you said a few. And you said,
so I went from no sales and marketing, you know, a website we threw up years ago, to outsourced marketing. Marketopia was our marketing team. And that team took us from no sales to, you know, we were getting 8 to 10, we'll call qualified leads. I didn't have to weed out that. So they were giving us the qualified leads. They brought in the qualified leads. It helped us with our sales process. We were able to join a peer group to help that. So having those peers, I talked about that early on, use those peers and become a really good peer group. I mean, right now we're all, 90% of us are best friends and we still talk and meet and help each other out where we can. Right now I can call pretty much any one of them. If I said, hey, I have something in New Jersey, I guarantee you E2 is there. They'll stop everything and they'll be there for us. So as we, mm-hmm. as we went down the marketing journey, we focused our website, got SEO, Google paid ads. We got, all the things we had no idea that, again, not my niche, wasn't in marketing, didn't go to school for marketing, had no idea. And we joined forces with, the marketing team there and just grew quickly in leads. Then I brought in another business partner that had sales experience that really drove that home, bringing in the leads, bringing in the wins, closing. I'm good at relationship. Mm-hmm. I was sucked at closing because I just never followed up. You know, if someone said, yeah, we're interested. Instead, I should have been following up. I should have been doing things. Or, yeah, I'm not interested right now. But then I'll be honest, the one our sales guy that we brought in to help with this, he called this person every month. And eventually they said, guess what? We're ready. It's a year later. And it was a large contract. It was, you know, a really big deal. And they took our premium service and their, you know, things like that, where I didn't have time to do that. And I wasn't a sales mm-hmm. guy because I hate being the pushy guy and being the one that hounding you and doing, I just want to be the relationship guy that I know a guy and I call Sean up, he gets stuff fixed.
Yeah.
So that's what helped us. It was truly marketing, focusing on sales, getting ourselves lean, putting the right people in the right seat and making sure that we focused on sales and operation were joined together. You hear so many people are disjointed at operational level and sales. Yeah. I know people who had to stop sales because operations couldn't meet up with it. You know, they had to stop their entire sales staff and get operations fixed so they could actually take on more work. And that's kind of where we were too. We couldn't do sales even if we wanted to because we weren't operationally there yet.
Right. So you mentioned 8 or 10. Is that leads? Is that per
month?
Yeah, that's... a lot of MSPs don't do that in a year.
Right. Right.
You know, and so that's tremendous. And then the part that you mentioned is then you have to close them. And it's a different skill set. Marketing is its own skill set.
Yeah.
Actually closing and follow up is its own skill sets. Yeah. I don't know what I'm getting at. What you're saying is like in realizing you're not the expert in all those areas. Mm-hmm. And then bring those people in, whether they're business partners or the 20 or Marketopia or, you know, whatever, like you did it in a lot of ways, but just listening through your story, it feels like realizing you're not the right person maybe for that area, marketing or CFO or whatever it is, HR, and then bringing in the people.
Yeah. That's 100%. You have to recognize quickly what you're good at. And if you're not good at it, bring the right people in that are good at it and allow them to do that. Control. Stop being, I know a lot of MSP owners feel they have to have control of everything. You have to.
Why are we so bad at this, Sean? Why as MSPs are we so bad at this? Why do we?
Because we think we know better than everyone else.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know why. I felt that way at the beginning too. I really did.
Yeah.
I thought I knew better. I thought, you know, I'm not going to have someone tell me how to run my business. But once you learn that, you know, there's others that are better at those individual areas of the business and give up the control, because that was hard too. That was some of the contentions between a business partner of mine too. We both had control because we both were in IT. We both think we know better. And, you know, until you can figure out how to let go of control and give those opportunities to the people you put in place and they're in the right seat, allow them to grow that piece of it. Marketopia is a great example. Mm-hmm. I started off very low. I was very skeptical. I'm like, It's a lot of money. I don't believe in this yet, but until I let go of control and went all in, that was the key. That was the turnaround. At first, I'm like, nah, you know what? Just do my website. Yeah, I'll have a caller call every so often. You know, I only want a quarter caller or whatever they offered at the time. I was getting maybe one lead, two leads maybe every 2 months.
Yeah, just dip my toe in.
Now, again, I say release control and let people do their jobs that they're good at. You also have to manage them. They're vendors just like anybody else. They have to be managed. So it's that trust and verify. Let's trust that they're doing their job, but let's verify. Until I learned that, that was a game changer too, because at first I did let go. Go do it. Throw it over the fence. Go take care of it. Let me know. Until I started digging back into Marketopia and seeing why aren't we getting this? Or what are we doing here? Once we got that partnership, because it's truly a partnership. You're not there as that's your vendor. That's your partnership. They're running your marketing. That's your marketing team. So would you just let your marketing team do whatever they want? No, you wouldn't. You would be involved.
Nah.
Same with the 20, when I got involved with the 20. I won MSP of the year at the 20 because I got involved. I talked to all the members. I talked to all the staff. I made sure that the product we were sold, we were getting too. I trusted that, hey, you can take these customers on, started slow, pushed all the customers on there, and then I started verifying. And that partnership worked out great.
Let me switch gears and ask, what's the biggest lesson you've learned over all your years in business?
My biggest lesson, trust your gut.
What do you mean by that?
My gut was telling me I was doing some things wrong, but I didn't listen. I allowed it to, no, you know what? That particular person is doing the right thing. We believe they're doing the right thing. Trust your gut. If you need to stop something, stop it. Stop the train. Don't be afraid to stop the train. That was my hardest thing, is allowing myself to stop the train early enough. If this customer isn't the right customer for you, stop that train. And I had customers that were not right for us, and I needed a fire way earlier, and I didn't. So trust your gut. My biggest lesson was not trusting that gut, and I lost revenue. I went down a path of I knew T-Mobile was getting too large, and I didn't trust my gut to go back and look at what we need to do to set ourselves up if T-Mobile did leave. I just kept getting complacent. So the biggest lesson learned, don't be complacent. You become complacent, you lose. I'd say those are my biggest lessons over the years of a business owner.
If you could do one thing over or differently, what would it be?
I would have started my MSP from one customer or 90% to a vision of how do I get different verticals. So the one thing I would have done different is sales. I'll be honest. That's the biggest thing I didn't do. I ignored sales for so many years and didn't think sales was important. I thought they would just come. So that was one thing I would definitely change. I would hire a true seasoned salesperson as soon as I may have not hired the business partners I've had without a salesperson. Maybe, that maybe would have been one of the things I would looked at.
Given all that's going on, what's something you're looking forward to right now?
Well, recently rolled up. I'm helping the 20 grow. It's a great time to be part of such a great experience. I mean, just building a company again to grow and see the similarities of a startup again,
What is your role now?
So I'm the VP of regional operations for the 20. manage the Midwest region right now, helping all the other regions grow as well. I am, I'd say a strategic partner to the COO, working with him and the teams. Midwest comprises of Detroit, Wisconsin, Chicago, and growing that has been, last year that I've been doing this, we've built a team. Again, I built a team that is, consistent. So we don't have, you know, prior to me, this team was a couple people moved on. And a team that is, they are willing to work with each other. They're not in silos. They're working as a team. We're building confidence in each other. We're coaching and training each other. So watching that grow and then helping the other regions build process and standards has been a great opportunity for me. I love it. I love people, helping people. I think that's when I do finally settle down, I think my next thing would be a nonprofit to help people. How do I help people? Whatever that is, it could be anything. So that's in my nature. I help family, friends, people I probably shouldn't help, but I do, you know, I want to help people.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. What's your biggest challenge right now?
My biggest challenge is what's life after the 20? 53 years old. I have grandbabies, retirement, financial freedom. Those are the things that my biggest challenge right now. As far as if you're looking more specific for MSPs and growth inside of that, the biggest challenge is keeping customers right now. Us as MSP leaders in the nation right now, I would say any small to medium-sized MSP, you're going to have a lot of competition out there. We're looking at people are looking for price cuts. They're looking to see how they can they need to become leaner, you know, businesses. So there's going to be a lot of competition, and there's going to be a lot of us large MSPs like the 20. We're going to be looking at how can we help, where can we help out. But that's going to be their biggest problem in 2025 is, you know, keeping customers and working through this price cut. You know, how can we get cheaper service and get the same level of service? That's the other thing. You know, talking to other MSPs, they're struggling with it. And some are growing, just growing because they are able to take on some of these other customers where these smaller MSPs cannot take them on because either they're trying to do things at so cheap of a level that they can't make any money. So they can't really take on any more. They have to stay where they're at, where, you know, I'm seeing people in New Jersey growing. I see people in Miami and Florida regions, they're growing. A lot of my partners here in Michigan are growing. You know, people that are members of the 20, they're growing just because we have the power to do that of giving a great price, great service, and be scalable to give them that enterprise experience that everyone deserves at the small to medium sized business, where the smaller MSPs, they're going to struggle. They're going to have a hard time.
What's the number one book you'd recommend?
The EOS system. That I would say we brought the EOS into play early on 2019, 2020, when things were lost T-Mobile. That book really helps define in focus big rocks and just all those things that are important to help grow a business. EOS put that in a book. They have a system in place. And we use that today, even at the 20, some of the EOS piece. But yeah, that was probably a good book. And I would say that would be the best book to read right now if you're looking for growth and trying to get your teams to grow.
Traction.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Traction. Thank you.
If there's anybody that would love to reach out or connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
They can call or email. I'm always an open door for anyone. Schedule time with me. I'll spend time with anyone who's looking to grow. That's, you know, being that helpful background. I you know, if I can help someone grow, that gives me the I feel fulfilled. You know, my life is doing well then. So if there's anyone out there that needs help, you can reach me at smarino@datatechcafe.com. And we can go from there.
It's a wonderful gift. Make sure to take Sean up on that. And I just love your heart to help people and to give. And this has just been an amazing gift. So thank you so much for being on MSP Mindset today, Sean.
Thank you.